All right, Cubs fans, here we are with the post-game show after Game 4. I think we're all in better spirits, I think. I mean, this is the result you guys wanted, right? I mean, I'm just assuming, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah,
what? Asking for the offensive night, you know. Oh, man. See, I'm speechless. Just like last night.
So, we're going to just talk about Game 4. We'll maybe look a little bit ahead to Game 5. But obviously, this is a much better... These are much better circumstances to do an episode. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I'm joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hi, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Okay, before we get started, I didn't want to mention it last night because I was in a bad spot last night, and I think that I got a lot of feedback from our episode, and I think a lot of people appreciated our, I guess, just honesty.
And candor, if you will.
Right, yeah, I think people understood. I don't need to say anymore. I think people appreciated it, and I just did not feel that it would be right to do anything but just... turn on the mics and be honest, and that's what I felt like we were. And as we tried to come to grip, you know, with things that were going on. Anyway, so I didn't mention it last night because I was like, I'm not. I don't even think this thing's going six games. But you know, like there was that part of me where I was just like, man, if they can't, you know, this is the NLCS from last year all over again. Like these are things that are going through. Like I think these things go through all of our heads. Like last night, did you guys not think like? Oh boy, here we go. This is going to suck. So anyway, we are doing a Game 6 watch party in the Quad Cities, which is kind of where we started. And oddly enough, the three of us don't live there anymore. But I'm going to be there. Andy, you guys are going to be there, right?
Yeah, we're planning on it.
Yeah. Not, Kurt, you were kind of up in the air yet.
Yeah, I'm still up in the air.
Okay.
We'll see.
So what we did that live podcast episode or that live appearance episode at the Market Grill in the Hy-Vee on John Deere Road. And I really searched high and low to find a rental spot that we could do, you know, with some of the other establishments in the Quad Cities. And it's just such short notice. And so so we're going to do it at Hy-Vee again, which I think is actually good because we can really just kind of take the place over. And they have lots of TVs. They actually have pretty decent beer and good food, too. So, I mean, it's a good spot. It's family friendly, so you can bring your kids. So,
And good deals, like if you need to pick up some stuff after the game.
Right. Like a pound of ground beef.
And Mama Basso's. I mean, think about it. You drink a little bit. Andy, what's my go-to when I start drinking? What's my snack of choice?
Oh, your snack of choice? Yeah. I don't know, soft cookies?
Yeah, yes, exactly. So I can walk right over to the bakery and get my soft cookies.
Get that crunchy stuff out of here. Need the soft stuff.
I need the bakery cookies. I will probably at some point walk over and get some cookies. But we're going to be there. So if you're in the Quad Cities, like definitely come down, hang out with us. We're going to have I've heard from quite a few people. We're going to have a nice little crowd down there. And if you're from outside of the Quad Cities and you just want to watch the game with us and other Cubs fans, you know, just, get a hold of me and we can figure it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I think Game 6 is no matter if that's the deciding game or not, it will be. It's going to be good because it's a very important game, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So hopefully, I'm hoping for a Cubs clinch that evening. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be great. I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but there's a pitcher named Clayton Kershaw who's
right.
First name is Clayton, last name Kershaw.
Okay,
I think
for the Dodgers, you might have heard of him.
Okay,
he may be pitching in Game 6. There's this fella named Joe who likes to say his name a lot. So
right.
Clayton Kershaw is really good. Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
We'll see Clayton Kershaw. Anyways, I just needed to drop a little Joe Buck hate in there because
guys,
I was getting old.
Guys, I turned 38 this year, and if the Cubs win one more game, they will have tied 2003 for the deepest run into the playoffs I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. I love it, man.
Yeah. I'll tell you, tonight we needed that, and the team needed it, and oh my gosh. I mean, I really think last night and today, Cubs fans were in a bad spot. And I was still feeling a lot of just kind of sadness and just like, you know, the offense just hadn't really given me much to be hopeful about. I know what this offense is, but what their potential is. I know what they're capable of. But just like in the NLCS last year, we knew what they were capable of then, and we just never got to see it. And so, but about, I would say about an hour and a half before game time, I got all of a sudden this like rush of confidence in this game tonight. And I think I was like letting other things just cloud my judgment. And all of a sudden I started thinking about tonight's game. And all of a sudden I just felt like, okay, we've got this one tonight. Then we even it up. And like we said on last night's episode, at that point it's a 3-game series and the Cubs have home field advantage. Two of those games are in Chicago. So
yeah, I took a lot of comfort in what Kurt said last night about you get one more win and the series is tied. And then you have to play a 3-game series with home field advantage.
Right.
So I really was holding on to what Kurt said last night. Honestly, that was big for me.
Yeah,
and that was the only optimism I could muster. That's and what, I'm glad it came true.
Well, and I said last night, towards the end of this game tonight, I actually listened to the end of our last episode to see if we gave any predictions or anything. We didn't really. But at the end of the episode, I said that I thought the Cubs could come back with a vengeance and take away the momentum from the Dodgers. And I think that's absolutely what they did tonight. The Dodgers' body language, I thought, was bad. I thought that their ballpark emptying out in the seventh inning doesn't show a lot of confidence in the team. And I think the Dodgers, I don't think, you know, they, like you mentioned, Kurt, they still have Kershaw going. So I think they're, and they still have Rich Hill to go. So, I mean, I think that I don't think that, like, this is the nail in the coffin on the Dodgers. Right. I think that they still have reason to think that they're in this series. But man,
but how great does it feel though that the original fear, and I should clarify my earlier Kershaw was only to bash Joe Buck, not to instill fear over him pitching. But you know, with the bats coming alive, suddenly no pitcher seems too scary. Versus right. when nothing's happened offensively, any pitcher's a little bit scary, especially Kershaw. And so now you've definitely sent a signal to the Dodgers that, now the bats are alive.
Right.
And this is a lot. This is a really, really hard team to beat.
Right.
When they hit like this.
Yeah. Yeah, because they can just pile on and they can generate. I mean, the way that they scored tonight, I thought was awesome. I mean, let's look at that fourth inning real quick. Although before we move on, we're talking about Cubs fans being in a bad spot. You guys know Mike Leonard, and he sent me a Facebook message today. Actually, so I'm gonna try to patch this together because it's been a wild couple of days. I think that he sent me a Facebook message before yesterday's game and said that the Cubs were going to score 8. I think he told me. And then, of course, the Cubs offense did nothing. So he was wrong there. And then today he sent me a Facebook message and said that he couldn't see how the Cubs would score any more in this series. And he was supremely wrong on that one. So I sent him a message tonight and said he's the anti-Nostradamus.
Well, he was one game off for the offensive explosion.
That's what he said.
So I think that's pretty good. I mean, Nostradamus was, I'm sure he was off by hundreds of years on a lot of his predictions. So I don't know. It's pretty good for Mike.
He did. I mean, it was looking pretty good. He looked like he could be right for the first few innings with
right.
I mean, they were getting no hit, and I was like, oh no.
But that's just what they needed though, and that's what I think everybody's been saying is if they could just, and I think I said this last night, like if they could just get a good hit, just something to go their way, I thought that like it could pick up steam, and that's exactly what happened in the fourth inning. And I also, while we're on the topic of predictions, I do want to say. And I screenshotted it. I was texting with Bob from Moline, And in the fourth inning, he said they put up a four spot here. Which what? Is exactly
Before
what
they did.
Yes, yeah. Nice. He sent me that in between the bottom of the third and the top of the fourth.
Dang, Bob Stradamus. I do want to say that was huge for Zobrist to take the initiative to try to bunt there to get on base.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did it. And I really think that that was the spark the Cubs offense needed.
Yep.
Was just, let's get some traffic on the bases and, you know, whatever it takes. And Zobrist executed perfectly, and that really got everything rolling.
Yep, I agree. It put pressure on. That's what they needed to do in this series, was the Cubs needed to put pressure on the pitching, the Dodgers pitching, and the Dodgers defense. And that absolutely happened tonight by just didn't the Dodgers end up with four errors?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. So, but yeah, so in that fourth inning, I'm just going to kind of run through what happened. Zobrist started things off with the bunt. Then Baez got a single. Contreras hit a single, which scored Zobrist. Hayward grounded out, but Baez scored. Russell homered. And then Lackey grounded out, Fowler doubled, and Bryant struck out. So they sent eight guys.
I think it's I don't want to interrupt you, but no. I think it's important to point out too, like, so that we've covered the bunt, but then Baez's hit was just off the end of the bat, little like
right
flare that landed, and that's so what they needed. They needed a ball to land that probably in a lot of other situations.
Well,
and then it just piled on from there, and then they just start getting confidence builds,
right.
And then they just
everything,
start crushing the ball.
Right. Suddenly, everyone in the dugout and on the field suddenly looked loose in that inning. Right. Like it was just like they exhaled, like, okay, this is what we are. We, you know, and it was just like a dam bursting at that point.
Well, it was the BABIP dam. I mean,
right.
Javier Baez and Contreras, the two key hits in that inning, were both weak contact. They weren't great contact. And then you had the Hayward grounder to score Javier Baez. And all of that was just kind of bad contact, honestly. And so it was like, finally, they just started getting lucky on balls in play.
Yeah,
and then that really opened the floodgates. I mean, then we have the BABIP dam, and so then we have Addison Russell homering. All of a sudden, we have Anthony Rizzo the next inning homering, and it just all of a sudden a ton of momentum just from these little weak off the end of the bat type hits.
Right, and that's just what they needed, you know. Yeah. And it was across the board tonight, really. I mean, I think. Everyone was producing in a way. And I don't have the box score in front of me, but
I mean Hayward was the only.
But yeah, I mean, but
he was the big gopher, but he did get an RBI.
Yeah. I also, before we move off I do want to come back to the fourth inning, but before I forget, I thought it was great. So, whatever inning it was when Baez came to the plate with the bases loaded. And Joe Buck was like, or I don't know who said it, you know, but I think Joe Buck said something about like, well, this is where, you know, can Javi just, is this where he's swinging like crazy, or can he just kind of do what needs to be done here? And, you know, like coming down on, like, this offense has scored so many runs, yet the announcers can still find a way to like, well, he's been incredible, but he could overswing here. He might. And then he hits a sacrifice fly that scores two runs. I loved it.
Well, I loved your tweet, Corey, about national media frantically rewriting the narrative on the whole series, basically.
Yeah.
Because it's just like they really kind of latched onto the Cubs' futility. And then, oh, that's no longer a thing.
Right.
Yeah. Like the Cubs' futility at the plate, all of a sudden, just like we said yesterday, we've seen this offense flip a switch all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, and here we go. Like it happened. I mean, it happened today. And oh, now we need a new narrative. Like, right. What are we going to do?
And what really sucks. And I think that, like, let's say the Cubs just like take charge of this series. I think we will hear those broadcasters, you know, swinging from the Cubs nuts like they're have done for everybody else. You know, I mean, it's just
what, like, what kind of a sound would they make when they're swinging?
yeah.
But they will do that, and then suddenly, you know, then they won't seem quite so bad to us. But what just sucks is that they have to have that narrative. Like, they cannot broadcast. National media cannot broadcast without just an extreme narrative. And that's really unfortunate, because I think now it'll be like, oh, well, these guys aren't so bad because they'll be going nuts about the Cubs. When and then all of a sudden, Dodgers fans are going to be, like, extremely frustrated with the broadcast. I just wish that they could just broadcast and not have to, like, you don't have to fill every space with like an extreme, this is what's happening. This is what everything is. Everything is this until it's not. And then it's this.
Not. And then it's this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just what it is. And it's frustrating. And I don't even care. Like, I mean, in a way it's nice given how long the Cubs have been bad. It's nice to hear the national media kind of, like, you know, fawning over the Cubs, but I don't know. It's just, I just wish it was a little more, what, there's selfies down there.
So Andrew from Nebraska is putting a lot of selfies into the mix tonight. That's cool. We like it.
Yeah. So, well,
can we talk about the Pat Hughes, the turning point of the game. I think we should talk about the reviewed call at home plate on Adrian Gonzalez scoring play.
Yeah.
Well, when I first saw the replay, I thought actually that it was a good call. And of course I'm a homer, but like, it looked like his hand was still up, and then you can see a point where his hand moves because it makes contact with the plate. And so while he may have brushed the plate earlier, when it goes to replay review, they have to have very clear evidence of the opposite to overturn it. And I don't know. I mean, thankfully it was pretty, it wasn't that important.
To
the outcome of the game, but right. At the same time, I don't know. Of course, if that was reversed and it was a Cubs player, I would have been pretty mad, but.
Right, because when I saw it, I mean, I honestly thought he was safe. I thought he was out in real time. Then when I saw the reap, because the throw kind of beat him, even though it was not a great throw, the throw beat him. I don't, what is up with them, like, determined to send Adrian Gonzalez? It's like the second time this series they've done it.
Any other Hayward throw, he's out by six steps. Hayward makes a bad throw and he's still out.
Right. Yeah, that was just an atypical Hayward throw to the plate. It was probably the worst possible throw Hayward could have made. You know, 9 times out of 10, that's a better throw. And yeah, I think I could see how it looked like his hand was hovering before he actually brought it down onto the plate. So I can see that. I mean,
I think he was safe. I mean,
yeah, I actually
agree with you that he probably was safe. I'm just saying from the video evidence that when his hand, like, moves, because it looks like it touches the plate, it looked like there could still be air under it. So, yeah, again, I mean, like, I don't know. I think that there wasn't enough to.
I think you're right, though, in that it's a really, I think it's a good thing that the game didn't come down to that call. Mm-hmm.
Right. I like how instant replay, though, is like opening up a new realm of, like, of controversy, you know, of nitpicking, you know, fraction, you know, like microns off of a bag, you know,
right.
Yeah. Where it's just, you know, I kind of find myself longing for, let's just go back to when umps just made the call and it was over.
Yeah.
You know?
But at the same time, like, I like the idea that they can get things right. You know, like, yeah. I mean, look at that.
Exactly. When Zobrist is safe, yeah.
Right. I mean, he was clearly safe.
But, I mean, is that getting it right, though? And, like, Javier Baez comes, like, a fraction of an inch?
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I think that's the thing that needs to change. And I haven't read it yet, but I think that Dave Cameron wrote an article about how that rule needs to change. Like, second base is the only base that you have to stay on second and third as you're running. So first and home, you can run through, but second and third, you have to stay on. And that is what is leading to these weird, like, he was obviously there, but at some point he was not in contact with the bag and the tag happened to be on him. And I don't think that's like the spirit of the rule, I guess. So I think that is something that needs to be changed. And I'm not really sure how you change it. I don't know if like players running through second base is necessarily a safe thing.
Right.
So
Don't make a turn. Like, if you make a tiny turn, then,
right.
Then they can tag you.
Cause look, sometimes you might run through home plate like Dexter Fowler and run into a freaking umpire. Like, what did you see that? What was he doing over there? Did you guys see that?
I didn't even see that.
Oh yeah. When Fowler scored, he like ran through home plate and the umpire like crossed in front of him and he ran into him.
You know, speaking of the home plate umpire, how about melt my hard heart where Anthony Rizzo said sorry to the home plate umpire and they played the audio of him having a discussion saying sorry for making you perhaps look bad when I, you know, assumed strike two was a ball.
Right. I thought that was great. And when they actually played the audio, I was blown away because I was like, where is this all of the time? I would love to hear some of these conversations that happened on a baseball field. Like, right? I would love to hear that. Like, why are, I had no idea that there was a microphone on him. And maybe this is like, maybe they've played audio in other points in this series, but I haven't noticed it. I guess I missed it if they did.
Because there's always a lot had of some little tidbits,
yeah, that could be part of it.
You know what?
Like, did you play the audio of Adrian Gonzalez during the replay? Did you guys see that?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fox has safe. He's got safe. You know that.
Yeah, I kind of liked that.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. You feel like you're a little closer to the game.
Right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I want to say too, like, my wife Beth, you know, turned to me at that point. She's like, you know what? I feel great about if our son, you know, our son, his favorite player is Anthony Rizzo, and she was like, you know, after hearing that, like, I feel great about him looking up to this guy and seeing him as a role model after hearing that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I get excited about, coaches being mic'd up in the Little League World Series. I'm like, I want to know what they're telling that pitcher. That way I know what to say to the kids I coach. But,
well, and maybe miking people up would cut down on the F-bombs and stuff like that. Or
not from,
you know, players are cognizant of that. Well, not from
Mr. Lackey.
Not from Lackey. Yeah, no, he's not.
Everybody else would cut down on there. They would monitor themselves a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it would be. I thought that was really cool. I wish that we could hear more of that type of stuff. Let's see. Where do we go from here? While we're kind of on the topic of like just various various issues or whatever, did you guys see when Contreras came to bat, did you see him do the Zobrist bat shake thing?
No.
Okay. So it was after the, Baez, sack fly that two runs scored and there was the errors and stuff. And so Contreras was up next and he was doing the like Zobrist shake weight thing. Yeah. And then that was when they threw over to third base to make sure that Bryant had tagged up. I swear to God, he was doing the Zobrist bat shake thing. And it's just like, what is with this kid?
Well, they just really like each other. I mean, how about Rizzo using Caesar's bat, you know,
right. For yeah.
The last three at bats of the game. I somebody told me that he's done that before. Does that sound familiar to you guys?
No, I don't think so. But I haven't noticed it.
I mean, that's fantastic, you know, like.
But then the flip side is, though, he's got to find a guy who uses the same brand bat because they're all sponsored. So he's I'm sure they know this. This is, you know, not hard to figure out. But it's like, all right, I got to figure out who's got this bat.
Well, then when Almora came to the plate, I thought he was using that same bat, but it didn't have the blue tape on it. So it looked very similar, but it didn't have the tape. So I was like, how about everybody just uses Caesar's bat? I mean,
but
bat?
My first question is, like, is it the same size? Like, is it a little bit lighter?
Yeah.
Does he need to be using a little bit lighter bat? You know, like, all of a sudden, my mind is racing on this. but I think it's fantastic that a guy who's been left off of the postseason roster, let me give you a little nod, buddy, and I'm going to use your bat, and then it's going to break me out of my slump, basically. Yeah.
And then does he use it tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, I bet he does.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah, he does.
In the chat, Andrew says he can only use Caesar's bat because they have the same number of Z's in their last name. Which, by the way, so there's like 100 people watching right now. So if you're watching live, I'm going to play voicemails at the end of this episode. And so you can call our voicemail line right now and leave any thoughts that you have on tonight's game or predictions for tomorrow's game. The phone number is 309-517-0624. So that's 309-517-0624. Let's see. So I kind of felt go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to bring up one other thing that another chat Dallas brought up in the chat, which I think is a relevant conversation as well. But like, how do we feel about Hayward? I mean, he's the guy who didn't get a hit, even though he did get the RBI. You know, let's give him some credit. He's still, you know, stone cold. He looks terrible against any kind of heat. The defense obviously is an upgrade over Soler, but you know. But you do have Maeda going tomorrow, a righty. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that matters a whole lot for Hayward. But
well,
I don't know. What are your thoughts on Hayward tomorrow? And
you know, I guess my thought. I'll jump in first, and then you can go, Andy. But I mean, I just think what they had tonight worked, and so there's no reason to mess with it. And obviously, his defense. I think Hayward has a lot of work to do in the offseason. What was kind of nice about these like super slow-mo camera shots that they had is you could actually see how far behind Hayward was on these pitches. And I think it has a lot to do with his timing mechanisms. And I think he's just got so much going on that he's having trouble getting his timing right. But to answer mm-hmm. your question, Kurt, I think he should I say leave him in the lineup for tomorrow. What do you think, Andy?
I don't necessarily. I say that you maybe consider leaving him in against righties and you bench him against lefties without question. I think you have Soler and Almora as choices to play outfield. So you go with one of those guys if they're facing a lefty.
Which tomorrow is righty, but.
Right.
Right.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I generally agree. I think like all season, if the offense is clicking, you can afford his struggles. But earlier in this series, we couldn't. But now, thankfully, if this continues, I think you can leave him in there for the defense and then sub later if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you don't start him tomorrow and you want a lefty in there, you're going to have to either have Coughlin or LaStella. So I don't know. I would rather have Hayward's defense. And, you know, although he actually had, I remember exactly, but I mean, he had one at bat where he saw, it seemed like eight pitches maybe, and he fouled a bunch off, and he ended up striking out. But I thought that was a pretty good at bat for him. So I think the key, you know, and this has been the key all along, all this season, is that what the Cubs needed to do was to knock the starters out and get into the bullpen. And that's exactly what they did tonight. Urias only threw 72 pitches and got into that bullpen and just kind of piled on. And I just thought like it was great that the Cubs were able to generate a lot of runs, but do it in a way that they've done it all year. It wasn't like, you know, this was not abnormal from what we saw this year. And that's what I thought was really good, is that things just happened the way that they typically happen.
Yeah, and I think the other awesome thing was, so they got into that jam in the bottom of the fifth, and you know, Montgomery pitched amazing, got out of it with just the two runs scoring. But then, so it's, you know, suddenly it's a 5-2 game, and the Dodgers aren't out of it. But then the sixth, they're like, oh, and not only did they respond to the two runs, they scored, put up another five, and it just So yeah, it was nice to see continued scoring versus early scoring, and then just a complete flat line, and also to respond to any threat. It was just like, this was the Cubs we are used to, and it was so good to see them back.
This was the game I was waiting for, like, this entire series.
Offensively,
so glad,
I think,
to see all that offense.
Yeah. Yeah. I was disappointed in Lackey tonight in a way. I mean, I think Joe could have left him in there. I think Lackey maybe could have worked out of that situation that he kind of got himself with walking two guys to start the fifth. But at the same time, like, I had no problem with pulling him out because he looked like he was struggling a little bit. And I wish he would have been able to go an inning or two longer just to take a little bit of pressure off the bullpen. But like they have done for, you know, the whole second half of the season, it just seems like the bullpen steps up when they need to.
Yeah.
Of course, it's easy when you have the score that they had tonight. But sorry, Kurt.
Hey, but yeah, with the lineup being for the Dodgers being so lefty, it made so much sense to bring Montgomery, even though Lackey did not agree, as he said to Madden as he was walking to the mound. But
yeah, well, we kind of butted heads a little bit on text messages about, you know, what is the difference between Lackey like being a competitor versus being a jerk basically to his teammates. And at that point, like, I don't blame him for, hey, I think I can pitch long enough to be eligible for the win and let me get the win. I mean, there were some other moments in the game where, you know, perhaps he went a little bit too far with his teammates, but it was probably a good decision to pull him, but I can understand why he was upset about it.
Yeah, right. And I think it would have been different if he had given up maybe a hit, hit and a walk or something, any other combination.
Well,
you walk the two leadoff guys on run. I can't remember what he did the first guy, but the second guy, it was like four or five pitches. So he just could not find the strike zone.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, it made a ton of sense.
Well, the second one was the one where he was down 3-0 and then brought it back to a full count.
Right. Oh, yeah. And then,
right. I think the first one was more like it was just four pitches or maybe five. I don't remember exactly. But, yeah, I just thought I kind of, in a way, like Lackey's fire. I thought he just went a little bit overboard.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I get it if there's like one egregious call at home plate and you kind of glare at the umpire, but I just thought there was a little bit too much communication between him and the ump. And I think that, I don't know. I don't know if umpires hold grudges about that kind of stuff, but it seems like you're kind of doing yourself a disservice if you're like complaining about every borderline call. And I mean, look at like the way that Lackey would treat an umpire, and then look at the way that Rizzo treated an umpire.
Yeah,
and, how the umpire responded to Rizzo's treatment.
Right,
I mean, that says a lot.
Right
there.
Yeah, and
well,
I
look at how Lackey treated his own catcher and the interference, which, granted, is a really bonehead play, but talking about a kid in his first season.
Yeah, and he's already done it in the playoffs. He did it.
Yeah, so it was not a good play, and it started to maybe feel like that could change something, but then he just kind of freaked out on him, and that, thankfully, Bazio went out there and was like, all right, calm down. Like,
yeah, and again, crap, that's, man, that competitive spirit that he has, and that's why it bothered me the way that he was screaming at Baez early in the game. I thought that was a little bit ridiculous, because Baez didn't even really I mean, Baez had a bad throw because he got his legs taken out from under him and he got slid into. And so, like, I don't understand how, like, it does a team any good to have someone, like, screaming at someone else when what they did, like, Baez didn't do anything wrong. He didn't make a boneheaded play. There was no, you know, it was a forced error, I guess, you know? And so I thought it was a little uncalled for. And I think at that point, I think what really bothered me about it was that this, you know, they hadn't scored all their runs yet. This team was still struggling. And I thought, you know, the vibe in the dugout surely is not where it needs to be. There's, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure on this team. And I don't think that like having like your old crotchety guy out there on the mound screaming at you because someone forced a bad throw, you know, your throw to go wide. I don't understand. Like, I don't think that does anything for a team and the chemistry when you're already kind of struggling. If that's at some point during the regular season, then fine. That doesn't really bother me. But like right now, it's like the Cubs need to win. And they needed to get back on track. And who knows? Maybe Lackey yelling at Baez is what got the Cubs hitting the ball.
I think, though, like it was such a bang-bang play, and we're used to Baez making the ridiculous plays all the time that I think Lackey had a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction there that I don't know if he had time to process everything that just happened. He might not do it the same way.
Okay, but so many people are critical of the young players and the mistakes that they make. Don't you think that Lackey, as a 37-year-old veteran, should have the wherewithal to know that maybe even though you're angry that you didn't get out of that inning, that you don't need to be like yelling at a 23-year-old? I don't know.
I think they're used to it. They know what they have in him after the full season. I still don't like it, but I think that they probably don't take it personally. They know that's what he does. But I agree with you but expecting him to be different and sort of all of a sudden like him, I think is probably kind of silly.
But I mean,
also,
isn't it good though, like to have somebody like that? Everyone, you know, like somebody who's like wears their heart on their sleeve and is like, I care, and here it is, like it's an emblem, like on my jersey, that I care. Yeah. And so to be like, hey, you know, let's effing go to, you know, Contreras when he sticks his glove out too far and the bat hits it. I can understand that a little bit more than screaming at Baez on that play, you know. And so I think it takes, I don't know, I think it's good to have like that type there and present, because we have a lot of like feel good, like lead by example type leaders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not have like the vociferous guy, you know, as well?
Right. He kind of completes the clubhouse. I don't know if like, right when you're down 2-1 in a must win game, I don't know what that does to chemistry. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just didn't know if that was the right spot to do it in. But
yeah,
thankfully he did pitch well in the four innings that he did throw. So
yeah,
I was happy about that.
Yeah,
other than the walks,
right, which he ended up getting charged those runs.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, let's for a second, we've kind of talked about Russell and Rizzo, but the two combined went 6-for-10 tonight with two home runs. They each went 3-for-5, and Russell's outs like very well could have been home runs. Like Russell almost had three home runs tonight, and it was, you know, especially with all the talk about how Russell might be worn out and that they may have just played him a little bit too much this season. It was so great to see him kind of snap out of it. And of course, Rizzo. And it the last couple of games, it had felt like Rizzo was close to snapping out of it. But man, you get those two going and everyone else kind of just piles on. And I mean, that we were back to like this being like a very scary lineup for an opposing pitcher. And it was great to see.
Yeah, I felt a lot better even when Rizzo hit that foul ball shot.
Right,
I was like, oh, good, he's seeing it now, and then he comes back and launches one. I mean, it was just so fun.
It was the perfect storyline.
Zobrist had a similar shot where he hit one foul.
Yeah, it's the perfect storyline that the two guys that have been seen as the sandbags on the Cubs cart, you know, coming through as the heroes in this game. It's perfect.
Yeah.
As far as a narrative, and then as far as the Cubs' momentum going forward.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to kind of jump back to a point that we made earlier, I'm just kind of glancing at my notes, and one thing that I wrote down was that, except I already lost it. Oh, I think like in these games that they really struggled in with against Kershaw and Hill, the Cubs were really forced to change their game. They weren't able to, you know, with the way that Kershaw and Hill, or especially Kershaw, was like pounding the zone, and they weren't able to display that patience at the plate and take a bunch of pitches, force up a pitch count, draw walks. They just, you're not able to do that against Clayton Kershaw. And like, it was nice to see them to be able to do it. And I think to start off the game tonight, Urias was really, or however you say it, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong.
You said it right.
Urias.
You said
it right. He was pounding the zone at the beginning. And then like when he lost a little bit of his control, then all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, this is what, you know, like they breathed a sigh of relief, and it was like, oh, now I can take pitches. Now I can wait for good pitches. I can force them to throw, you know, the pitches that I want to see, and really just jump on mistakes, which is exactly what they did. So, and I think that they're going to be able to do that tomorrow night too against Maeda. I think it's very difficult to do that against Kershaw.
Yeah.
Which,
so let's,
I think there's a lot of
the series going forward.
Yeah. So, let's see, Lester and Maeda will pitch tomorrow on, or today, whenever I guess you're listening to this, on what day is today? It is Thursday now. and so what do you guys think about this matchup? I mean, it's basically, it's a matchup we've already seen. So
yeah, we've already talked about these two pitchers a lot. And one thing that's great about this matchup is Lester is one of the Cubs' best, like matchup wise, the best Cubs pitcher against this Dodgers team.
Right.
Now he was a little bit off his game, in game one. But it still worked out fine. And so if he can actually get a feel for all of his pitches, he can really shut down this Dodgers lineup.
Right. You mentioned he was a little bit off of his game, and he only gave up one run, the home run to Ethier. He went six innings, and you could tell he was off his game with the, you know, just three strikeouts and everything. But if I think this Dodgers team is so bad at hitting lefties that Lester can be off his game and still shut them down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. And they should have plenty of confidence they can get to Maeda. You know, they did it in game one, scored three runs on him. And so
in just four innings.
Yeah. And now, you know, they run him. They get to, like, Baez, who they touched up tonight, and some, right, of the guys. Some of the other guys that came in late in the bullpen looked pretty good, but for the most part, the guys that came in.
I think the Cubs had kind of maybe taken their. I think that maybe the Cubs had taken their foot off the gas pedal at a certain point.
Yeah, and like Joe Blanton's postseason ERA is 67, so hopefully we see him. Yeah, it was 67. I think it's come down actually, because he made the other appearance. But
well,
he had a clean inning. Yeah, the last appearance.
Well, yeah, he the Cubs did a number on him in the eighth inning of Game One. That's for sure.
So yeah, it looks, everything is, yeah. You got to have a lot of confidence about tomorrow, but not too much that you. Well, like I'm not playing. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, I feel real confident about tomorrow, and I think that winning tomorrow, winning on Thursday is really important, because then, you know, you go back to Chicago and you only have to win one of those games. Then at that point you force the Dodgers to have to win both. And I think beating the Cubs twice at Wrigley Field would be tough for the Dodgers to do, even though they probably have favorable pitching matchups, especially for Game 6. Of course, we're also, like, you know, if you listen to the TV broadcast tonight, we assume it's Maeda on Thursday, but the Dodgers could pull out an old trickery. And trickeration.
I can't stand it when football commentators say that.
To quote ESPN college football commentators.
But okay, so they need to beat Maeda. I mean, that's kind of a given. And then they just have to beat one of Kershaw and or Hill once.
Right, right.
And so I think that's doable. I think they beat one of those guys. And I, you know, once again, going back to the way Kurt put it, is now they have to win a three-game series with home field advantage. And so I love the Cubs' chances.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. I think any predictions you guys want to make for Thursday night's game?
I think it's on a roll now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's not quite the runaway it was tonight, but maybe 6-1 Cubs win.
I say 7-2.
I'll say 6-3.
Well, three wins. I feel real good about the Cubs' chances, and man, going up 3-2 would just be delightful. And I'm really excited for Thursday night's game. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So, so anything else you guys want to say before we wrap it up here?
I don't think so. Although I did see a Horry Cow shirt in the audience tonight. I was a little disappointed in that.
I did see that,
but. Yeah. Other than that, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, so if you're in the Quad Cities, come down on Saturday night to the Market Grill in the Hy-Vee on John Deere Road. It's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully it would be incredible to see the Cubs clinch the series and punch their ticket to the World Series. That would be amazing. So we'll be down there, and I don't think that they've announced the game time yet, so I'm assuming it's going to be... Well, it'd have to be the night game, yeah, because the other series is done. Yeah, so it will be the night game. So it'll probably start at 7 o'clock. And so, yeah, definitely come down and hang out. If you're from outside of the area, maybe within a decent drive and you want to hang out, get a hold of me and I'll get you all the details. But, yeah, so anyways, this episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. Patreon is how we pay the podcasting bills. It's how we do live events. It's... how we do everything, I guess, and everything that we make with Patreon is invested back into the podcast. And if you like what we're doing here, if you appreciate all these episodes in October, then you can help support us, and you can go to patreon.com/IVNV. That's patreon.com/IVNV. And we will be back Thursday night after game 5 to talk about that game. And until then, go Cubs. No other, I can feel it down in my soul.
Destiny's calling. Take the line. Hey, it's Steven from Chicago. I'm a Patreon supporter, and I wanted to call in and give my thoughts going into game 4. And I realize that this is not going to be played till after game 4. So hopefully what I say here comes to pass. And if not, you guys can delete this and or not, and just play it. And I'll look like an idiot. And that's fine. But yeah, going into game 4 here, I know it's easy to be frustrated. And I think one of the reasons is that these don't seem like the Cubs over these past two games that we've watched. For the previous 167 games, you know, we've had a lot of defensive mistakes and the bats have been asleep in positions in the lineup where we need them to not be asleep. But I'm trying to stay positive, and I don't think it's an irrational positivity because we got John Lackey going tonight. I believe he's making his 22nd playoff start against Julio Urias, who is 20 and making his first playoff start. And I know he's a good pitcher, but this is a big stage, and hopefully the weight of the moment gets to him, and we're able to tie this game up or this series up 2-2. And if we do that, basically we've got a 3-game series with Lester, Hendricks, and Arrieta starting those 3 games, 2 of which are going to be at Wrigley Field. And I think if you were to query most Cubs fans and offer them that scenario, you know, our playoff woes aside, they'd feel pretty good about it. So I'm trying to stay positive. Obviously, we need our bats to come alive. But, you know, they're a special team. We've watched this team. We know what they can do. And, you know, I was thinking about it. You know, the 2004 Red Sox, they were down in the ALCS to the Yankees, but 3-0, and they were able to come back to that. So, I feel like this team is never going to be out of it, and I'm not going to quit on them until they are out of it, which I don't think they will be. So go Cubs. Hopefully when this is played, we're tied 2-2, and it's a whole new series for us. All right, thanks. Bye.
Hey, IVNV listeners, this is Ben from Oklahoma City. I just want everyone to see what's going on here in the game tonight. I've got the presidential debate on one screen. I've got the Cubs up 5-0 here in the fifth on another screen. And as Lackey gets pulled from the game, he says, are you freaking kidding me? While Donald Trump is talking about Aleppo. And I think that's just a very fitting moment. I wanted to share that with you guys. Thanks and go Cubs.
Hey, this is Sam in Raleigh. I'm so tired of watching Rizzo come up and not be like, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah, he just went yard. Okay, bye.
Hey, guys. This is Jonathan calling from picturesque Muncie, Indiana, and I'm just glad we ran Larry King out of those front row seats tonight because his decrepit frowning was just incredibly off-putting, and I'm glad to be done with it, hopefully, for the rest of the series. All right. Keep up the good work, boys. God bless.
Hello, guys. Andy, Corey, Kurt. I was in a conversation with a friend the other night who's a Nationals fan. We were talking during the Dodgers-Nationals series, and he was expressing this thought to me that only the negative Cubs fans are the true Cubs fans. And I responded back in a sarcastic sort of tone that was, yeah, the only fans that I want to hang out with are the ones that want to lose. But I think that's an interesting dichotomy, this breakdown between the fans that don't believe in curses and don't dwell on the past, but then also sort of embrace this sort of spiritual new definition where as Cubs fans we are pushing through new territory here, and we're redefining the narrative, and we're redefining our own expectations. That is, that we can't look to the past in terms of winning, but we look to the past when we're losing. And that's a line that we're walking now, where we don't have narratives because this team isn't built on the past. This team is built with a notion towards the future. And I don't know if I've done a good job of expressing this. In fact, I'm certain that with this call that I have not expressed it. But I will say that we look to the past for our color, but we only trudge. We push forward. We push forward with a new narrative. It's not the narrative that the national media will express because they haven't experienced this team. They experience this team when they need to. That is the current trends, the current playoff push. They're jumping on like any other Chicago fan was that is joining this bandwagon. I don't mean to just go on and on, although, you know, I would love to. I think the important what I'm trying to say is we're going into a territory that we may be the first Cubs fans to be entering this territory for a while. Certainly we're the first Cubs fans to be interacting via podcast and via Twitter. And I would just say that it's so easy to jump on to, look at the past. But I would also say, like, let's not look at the past and let's just think about, like, what this modern era is. And by that I mean past the modern era of the Cubs, past the 80s, past the 90s, past the early 2000s. And let's look at the future as if, you know, we're redefining the way things go. Anyway, you guys are great. Go Cubs.
Oh my God, that game tonight. It was nothing. I just made some chicken sandwiches. It was great. That game got me drunk. Because every time something awesome happened, it was another round of shots. And I thought it was fantastic, and that's a hell of a way to fucking rally. I'm so glad that Addison Russell finally fucking showed up. I'm so glad that Anthony Rizzo just showed up. And I think it's going to be the fucking turning point. And fuck yeah, go Cubs.